The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, March 6th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
You know, I'm like a smart person.
We call BS!
Hi, thanks for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. First, I need to get some stuff off my chest, and then we will get to the news. And in the end, I have a rundown of news that is guaranteed to make you smile. But first, the Republican Party is creepy. It is old, and it's creepy. The Republican Party promotes pedophilia, or at least pedophiles.
Hello, Roy Moore.
It fights for child marriage, as in Kentucky this week, where a bill to stop child marriage in Kentucky was stalled by a conservative group.
Here in the U.S., hundreds of thousands of young girls have gotten married over the last 10 years. And they did it legally.
Republicans traffic in hypocrisy. They are obsessed with everything we do in our bedrooms.
Homosexual conduct should be illegal. Yes.
Should be illegal.
Yes. Sniffing around where they don't belong. They say they want government out of our business, but then they want to control women's bodies, lock up black and brown bodies, and they are obsessed with the gay. They call their wives mother and are so afraid that they, or the woman, won't be able to control themselves that they refuse to be in a room with a woman?
Here's looking at you, pet.
Now what is he afraid of?
They bow down to God and religion and shove their beliefs on people.
The near temptation of sin.
And in people, into women, in the form of transvaginal ultrasounds, raping them in a fight to save a clump of cells in the name of their God, only to abandon the baby and the woman once it is born.
Compassion would only bring more people into the welfare system.
The Republican Party is creepy. They fetishize guns in a worship only equal to their God. And they fetishize stripping the poor of life-saving services nearly as much as they romance about handing fistfuls of cash to the rich.
A massive $1.5 trillion tax plan, the largest overhaul in a generation.
The Republican Party is creepy. Republicans who would burn a foreign people to dust with glee, who would commit genocide for money, for racism, and cruel bloodlust.
And planes launched the opening salvo of Operation Iraqi Freedom.
They fear the foreign and the unknown, and they hate our dark-skinned brothers and sisters, because the Republican Party is creepy. And you must be the preferred shade, the preferred sex,
sexuality,
the preferred economic status,
religion,
and just the right preferred amount of ignorance. They strive to poison, to clear cut, to strip, to burn, to boil, to starve the very planet on which they, we, live.
Paris, climate accord.
The Republican Party is creepy. So here we are, on the precipice of the death of our democracy, our toppling republic, our ailing country, poisoned with powerful conservative forces, dosing the people with lies and half-truths. And half of the country, like baby birds, eagerly consume these regurgitated untruths. The Republican Party is creepy for watching our poisoned country crumble to pieces with glee. The Republican Party, also commonly called the GOP, ye grand old party, is one of the world's oldest extant political parties. The term Republican was adopted in 1792 by supporters of Thomas Jefferson, who favored a decentralized government with limited powers. And outside of a reasonable stint that started in the 1830s, until Nixon turned everything on its head with the Southern Strategy, the party had developed a conscience. But since, it has regressed to its 1792 roots and has not evolved past those 1700s beliefs, those archaic beliefs, those creepy beliefs, those poisoned beliefs. They are zealots. They are cretins. They are fools. They are idiots with more power than any party in this entire world, arguably. And they are responsible for the rise of this populist autocrat with fascistic tendencies and patent disdain for the democracy our very country was built on.
Build that wall! Build that wall!
This world is coming apart at the seams, and we would be arrogant to presume that we are unique with our malevolent Republican Party and their authoritarian daddy that we have no choice but to call president.
Not president!
There's very similar political movements in other countries in that liberal populist
autocrats opposing liberal principles, restricting freedom and thought and behavior,
have been rising for 25 to 30 years. Yatcha Mounk, author of The People vs. Democracy, Why Our Freedom is in Danger, addresses the world's waning interest in liberalism, in democracy itself, this fateful global phenomenon. Sure, we may defeat Donald and relish his downfall, hopefully all the way to a locked-up prison cell with his precious Ivanka and his other crotch bun, but the roots of the problem that gave rise to him have taken root across the world. While people never loved politicians or had absolute faith in politics, there was a tacit faith that maybe the system can work for me, for the common man, and for decades it did. Mounk points out that especially in the U.S. from 1935 to 1960, the living standard for the average American doubled. From 1965 to 1985, it doubled again. As long as parents' kids did better than the previous generation, our democracy was safe. But as that ceased to be true, thanks to St. Reagan with his trickle-down theory, his voodoo economics, his corrupt capitalism, and other forces, living standards for decades have been stagnant or worse, and the Republican Party passes the blame. These punitive Republicans who relish blaming the poor and the people that they were meant to serve. So the people feel abandoned, and the system seems as though it has failed us. And be it the system, or the corruption of the system that has failed us. People don't have time between jobs, between Netflix, sports games, and the noise of social media to ferret out the difference. And I argue, it is not the system that has failed us. It is the corruption of the system that has failed us. And a few details of the system.
Hashtag Electoral College.
Mounk points out another force pulling at the fraying threads of democracy, and that is what he calls a grand experiment that is being played out here and in Europe, in cultures that were built on and perceived themselves as to be monotheistic and monoethnic, which are evolving into multicultural ones. And those places that have been multicultural have been clear about their cultural and racial hierarchy. And the social shifts are proving politically difficult. While we should live up to our higher ideals, too many people feel that if we do, we will lose. If we allow other cultures, other races to rise up, then a different race and in a different culture will have to lose power and authority. And in a time where power, authority, and financial security are waning, it can be a lot to ask of people. I'm reminded of the instinctual conflict that rises in women. When power, security, opportunity are limited in a certain group, say women, then all other women are seen as a threat, and on a primal level, even seen as a threat to our very survival. It is why politics with women is so challenging. Seeing a woman rise to prominence hits women on a primal level. It is a threat. And this happens more fiercely and abundantly when women have less power and opportunity than in other places. Unsurprisingly, this happens more in economically depressed areas of America that also tend to be places where more religion thrives that keep women down, and in cultures where women are more subjugated and on far less equal footing than their male counterparts. So, as this country of ours, as a whole, has increased income inequality and also made it impossible for one generation to do better than the last, and in fact, each new generation is now doing worse than the last, we have a government who continues to enact policies that hurt the people who enrich the wealthy and the corporations who run the politicians, then fear of the other. Fear in the midst of this grand experiment where cultures and races blending rises. The us or them mentality is primal and real. If this understanding of where the racial and cultural anxieties lie is not quite enough to give one sympathy for those afflicted with it, at the very least, it provides some understanding, at least in part, for why it is they feel the way it is they feel. Of course, our loss in the faith of the system is not simply that. We, the people, have begun to feel that our vote does not matter. One of the chief tenets of democracy is that the people vote for a policy or a person to enact such policies, and the government then acts accordingly. But thanks to money and politics, lobbyists, and the damned revolving door, we no longer have a politics of the people, for the people, and by the people. And what is the answer here? So outside of money out of politics and cleaning up the messes, what is the answer here? In the face of our failing system, do we abandon the liberal democracy that our country was built on, that so many countries have thrived under? Venezuela, Turkey, and Hungary all once thrived under liberal democracies, and then their liberal democracy eroded. Virtual, if not complete, destruction of their political systems has led them to what? Let's put it this way. If you are planning to move to one of those countries, you might want to reevaluate your options. Things are bleak. The future looks grim, and the very structure, that is, the political system on which this country was built, has an uncertain future. So is there hope? Can we return our country's structural integrity? Does America have a future with a liberal democracy, hopefully one that works for the people once more? Monk had some thoughts on this, and I'm going to read them because you should take someone else's word for it and not mine. Quote, "The one opportunity that this moment presents us with is a chance to focus the mind. The generation that came of age during World War II understood why it is superior to live in a democracy rather than a fascist system. The generation that came of age during the Cold War understood, despite its many shortcomings, the United States was a much more just place to live than the Soviet Union. For people who have come of age in the last 30 years, it was easy to just focus on our shortcomings because there was no viable alternative out there in the world to which we were comparing ourselves. Now that people see what authoritarian populists have done to countries like Turkey or Russia, and many people are seeing what a populist like Trump is threatening to do to this country, I think there is a chance that they will relearn the importance of our political system." Unquote. We all may not believe in the importance of our political system, but for those of us who do, we can look to the teenagers who are fighting right now for gun control, who at 16 and 17 are talking about voting, about politicians.
Sadly, we have to stand up and take charge because nobody else will. Because our elected officials certainly won't.
Who are talking about starting with local politics and working their way up. Who are promising to fix the America we broke. They are talking about voting before they even can vote. Who are making politics and activism social interest cool. Who are defying the stereotype they have grown up under as spoiled, entitled, and trivial millennials.
We call BS!
A whole generation coming of age in a time of nearly unprecedented activism and civic engagement. The kind of engagement that is fighting to improve the system and save it from those who work every day to destroy it. Cameron Caskey and David Hogg, two of the student activists leading the gun reform movement sparked by the massacre at their Parkland, Florida high school, appeared on Real Time with Bill Maher on Friday night. They were talking about what they were hoping for with the nationwide march they have planned on the 24th. And here is Caskey.
With the march, we want Americans to stop being afraid of demanding our politicians to take action. They work for us. We don't work for them. And the march is us... The march is us coming out and saying to our employees, you guys suck at your job.
We have never seen anything like Donald Trump in this country, and we have taken much for granted. These kids, who are the largest voting bloc in America, or at least will be when they turn 18, and then the larger chunk of millennials, the ones they are in, the younger half, technically I'm a millennial, but just barely, but the younger half have experienced maybe two presidents of an age that they could really understand, and maybe some of them Bush, but they have seen a black president who revered democracy, who honored the system, and reached across the aisle to a fault, an inspirational statesman and pillar of integrity who struggled in the face of a Republican Party who refused to act for the people. Republican Party who cheated democracy, who betrayed the public trust time and time again. And they have seen and experienced the abomination that is the Orange Ruffian.
I mean this sincerely, I really do. To all of the generations before us, we sincerely accept your apology. And we appreciate that you are willing to let us rebuild the world that you fucked up.
Good luck trying.
First, the women rose up, and then the children. Stand with us, or get out of the way.
And now, it is my privilege and honor to introduce Robert Kennedy.
It is a revolutionary world that we all live in. And thus, as I have said in Latin America, and in Asia, and in Europe, and in my own country, the United States, it is the young people who must take the lead. Thus you and your young compatriots everywhere have had thrust upon you a greater burden of responsibility than any generation that has ever lived. There is, said an Italian philosopher, nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its success than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things. Yet this is the measure of the task of your generation. And the road is strewn with many dangers.
This is what democracy looks like!
So, let's check in with the government we have for the moment. This week in Congress, the Senate. There are 12 Democrats, 12, joining with the Republican Party, joining with Trump to bow to the big banks and usher in our next financial crisis. And we will remember their names. They are voting on S-2155, Economic Growth, Regulatory Relief, and Consumer Protection Act. Consumer protection, my ass. The rest of the week, the Senate is confirming judges right and left. I'm sorry, right and right. First, there is Karen Schuller. According to Above the Law, happily, she is one of five Obama appointees who Donald has renominated and confirmed. Craziness. Which is a smart approach, because renominees only need to be approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee and floor vote. The practice could work well in California, New York, and New Jersey, where there are Obama nominees like Schuller. Rumors from 2017 said that the White House was considering some of them for New York and New Jersey vacancies. So we'll see. California and New York both have 2 circuit court and 9 district vacancies. God, that's way too many. She was confirmed 95-0, and she's a woman. Yay! And then there's Tripp Self, otherwise known as Tillman Eugene, don't ask me, to be U.S. District Judge to the Middle District of Georgia, confirmed 84-11. Tillman Eugene proudly toes the conservative line as a trial judge. Self established a conservative record on criminal justice, presiding over many complex cases and handing out harsh sentences. Self has a long history of activity and contributions to the Georgia Republican Party. Self has financially supported former President George W. Bush, Georgia Senators Johnny Isaacson and David Perdue, and the presidential campaign of Senator Ted Cruz. The House this week will feature votes on bills to have financial regulators review current rules more frequently, prevent tax dollars from being spent on portraits of federal employees, and prevent political appointees from being appointed to career civil service positions. Which, not a bad idea. The rest of the week will feature votes on a bill related to emissions from ceramics manufacturers and home heating devices, which is a bill that says that they want to allow judicial review of any final rule addressing national emission standards for hazardous air pollutants for brick and structural clay products or for clay ceramics manufacturing before manufacturing, before requiring compliance with such a rule. This is shady. What they're really doing is removing regulatory decisions from the scientist at the EPA. And yeah, it doesn't matter now, but it will in the future and in the long run. And then there's another bill, easing emission standards from coal refuse power plants, named, get this, Satisfying Energy Needs and Saving the Environment Act, which, of course, will pass because Republicans...
You suck!
Let's visit the courts, where so much of our democracy has the potential to be saved, not to mention people's rights. So get this story, it makes me sick. So back in March, it came out that the Gestapo, known as ICE, was eager to separate children from their mothers at the border to deter immigrant crossings. But no formal policy was ever put in place. Regardless, these horrible, heartless, hopeless, cruel animals have been separating them. So, the Washington Post reports that Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service has documented 53 cases where undocumented immigrant parents have been detained separately from their children from June 2017 through February 18th. And the ACLU, God, we love the ACLU, is pursuing a case against Donald's vicious administration on behalf of a Congolese asylum seeker who has been detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, thousands of miles away from her 7-year-old daughter. The mother is currently detained in San Diego, while her daughter is being held in Chicago. Luckily, our friends at the ACLU are on the case. Miss L, the immigrant being represented by the ACLU, fled from the Congo to Mexico with her daughter. After having crossed the border, she presented herself to ICE in order to formally seek asylum. She wasn't even sneaking in. ICE officials felt she had a credible case, and yet, after 4 days, Miss L and her then 6-year-old daughter, named SS in court paperwork, were separated. SS was moved to a detention facility in Chicago. SS turned 7 in December. She and her mother have only been able to speak via phone half of a dozen times since they were separated in early November 2017. The suit seeks for Miss L and her daughter to be moved to a family detention center while their asylum case is processed. The Washington Post editorial board argues, quote, "The only principle at work in Miss L's case, if it can be called that, is the idea that future asylum seekers may be deterred if they are convinced that the United States is actually a crueler and more heartless place than their native country," unquote. 75 Democratic lawmakers sent a letter to DHS requiring an explanation for the increase in family separations. Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security has refused to comment on the case. Also in the courts, a bringing Monsanto down, or at least trying to strike a blow to their poison. The Guardian reports on Monday, a federal court hearing in one of my favorite cities, San Francisco, shined a much-needed light on the science surrounding the safety of one of the world's most widely used pesticides, a weed-killing chemical called glyphosate that has been linked to cancer and is commonly found in our food, our water, and even our own body fluids. This ingredient is the active ingredient Monsanto's branded Roundup and hundreds of other herbicides. Glyphosate represents billions of dollars in annual revenues for Monsanto and other companies. The chemical was deemed a probable human carcinogen by the World Health Organization's cancer experts in 2015, in a finding that has since triggered glorious waves of liability lawsuits against Monsanto. Poor Monsanto. Okay, researchers have written that the chemical is safe, but cancer victims claim, with some evidence, that Monsanto has ghostwritten those conclusions. And this week's events will mark the first time that the body of research, some that has been gathering dust in stuffy scientific journals or confidential corporate files, will be analyzed under oath for all to see. And lives are on the line. The Guardian points out that one in every two men and one in every three women are now expected to develop cancer in their lifetimes, and childhood cancers are on the rise. More than 3,000 plaintiffs suing Monsanto allege exposure to the company's glyphosate-based Roundup caused them or their family members to develop non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So the courts are calling this week Science Week, because the only evidence to be presented will come from experts in cancer science, including epidemiologists, toxicologists, and others called to analyze relevant research. Just science.
Science is real, y'all.
And the judge will decide if the lawsuit can move forward. But get this. Monsanto presumably went crying to our corrupt government. And I'm going to read from The Guardian. And remember that the House Committee on Science is Republican-led now. Quote, "The House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology held a hearing in Washington on the 6th of February to air Monsanto's complaints about the Internal Agency for Research on Cancers, IARC, the classification of glyphosate as a probable carcinogen, and to threaten to strip funding from the scientific body. The committee effort, effectively turning a war on cancer into a war on cancer science, was applauded by the chemical industry," unquote.
God, they're corrupt.
And stupid. Essentially, with the help of their Republican lackeys, Monsanto and other companies are waging a war to discredit science in order to bolster their right to kill people. Quote, "The public offering of expert testimony in San Francisco about Monsanto's pervasive pesticide presents an important opportunity to separate the science from the spin. We all should be watching," unquote.
Resist!
So let's shift gears. There's plenty of crap in America right now to focus on. That's a big bummer. But there is some awesome things as well. First, from Raw Story. Conservative men who work for our disgusting dictator are sad because they are having trouble finding someone to date.
You don't say!
See, once a girl finds out you work for Donald, they drop like Melania drops Donald's hand. One official said, quote, "A lot of times you'll connect with someone on the app and they'll Google you, find out you worked for Trump's campaign, and then it's pretty much all downhill from there," unquote. Second, Rachel Maddow, my wife, is going off like gangbusters, yo. Forbes reports that, quote, "MSNBC's The Rachel Maddow Show was the most watched show in all of cable TV on Thursday, with a total audience of nearly 3.2 million viewers. Maddow's ratings were high enough to put the show in the top 20 list of programs on television, landing it at number 12 behind shows like Big Bang Theory, Grey's Anatomy, and Will and Grace. Maddow's ratings came on a big night for the network, with 3 of the top 10 shows on all of cable, including The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell at number 5 and All In with Chris Hayes at number 6. MSNBC, which had record ratings in 2017 and finished second to longtime cable news leader Fox News in the February ratings period, took a decisive overall win Thursday, beating both Fox News and CNN among viewers 25 to 54, the demographic coveted by advertisers, unquote. Suck it, Fox. And yes, sadly for the country, Fox, the geriatric fake news network, is still at the top for total viewers. But don't worry, most of those viewers are dying off soon. So, good luck, guys. Third. On Monday morning, we got to watch Donald's name being torn off the Trump International Hotel in Panama as our president was formally evicted. As ABC News reports, the Trump Organization staffers were forcibly removed by police from the building on Monday amid a fight with the owner, Orestes Fintiklis, over management of the hotel. Quote, "I am the owner. Love and peace," unquote, Fintiklis taunted to staffers as they were led out of the building. Fintiklis then sat down at the hotel's piano in the lobby and played a song that included the lyrics, quote, "Fascism will not prevail," unquote. And then, to put the pin in the humiliation, ordered Donald's name to be ripped off immediately. You can watch his name being taken off on my Facebook page, at K Voice of Resistance. Fourth, the reigning champions of the NBA went to D.C. to celebrate last year's finals win on Tuesday, February 27th. But instead of visiting Donald in the White House, the players took local students to the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. Because they are amazing. Fifth, I'm reading from Ebony. Quote, Philando Castile was fatally shot by a police officer in 2016 during a traffic stop in the Falcom Heights area of Minnesota. Castile worked at the J.J. Hill Montessori Minnesota Magnet School as the nutrition supervisor. He was known for his helpful attitude and is reported to have paid for lunch meals for students who could not afford it. Now, Philando feeds the children. A charity founded in honor of the late 32-year-old has helped with the lunch debts in the school district where Castile worked. All 56 Minnesota schools within the St. Paul Public School District had the lunch debt paid off. Unquote. And the charity's website reads, quote, "No parent of the 37,000 kids who eat meals at school need worry about how to pay that overdue debt. Philando is still reaching into his pocket and helping a kid out, one by one, with your help." Unquote. And finally, Glamour reports that a group of women just bought the Weinstein Company. And that, my friends, is some sweet, sweet justice. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice or on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I've discussed in this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with host Patrick File and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer, 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always,
resist!
Give me a place to stand, said Archimedes, and I will move the world. These men move the world, and so can we all. Few will have the greatness to bend history, but each of us can work to change a small portion of the event. And in the total, all of these acts will be written in the history of this generation.